Whatever this is not going to work.
TGIF, it's Manson Mitchell with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to jumpstart your weekend. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Kramer. Hi, everybody. I'm Gary Mans.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
TGIF, indeed. We are Manson Mitchell in your ears for the hour. And once again, of a Friday, we get to work with bad boy Benny Mathers at the board. And I believe Benny is in celebratory mood today. Congratulations, Benny. The Washington State University Cougars did it in the first round.
For a quick second, I'm like, where are you going with this? Like, I had no idea because it's so rare.
We watched your game. Watched your game for your team, and we cheered them on yesterday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, on to the second round. We beat Drake by 5. I'm super happy. But more importantly, did you know on this day in 1894, I'm sure, Suzanne, you knew this already.
I do know it. I was there. Go ahead.
The first Stanley Cup championship is played.
Oh,
see?
How could I not know?
I don't know.
That,
you're not a true fan, but more Chicago
so the
Blackhawks
Stanley
fan
Cup
there, yeah.
Was actually played in March. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I did not know that. Okay, I guess I'm not a true fan. I am sufficiently chided. I will go to my corner, put my head down, and cry for probably most of the rest of the day.
Don't go to the corner. Go to the penalty box.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Gary. See, Gary's always on top of it. Never skips a beat, you know. Hey, there he is. All right.
Yes. Congratulations to the Cougs. I hope they go deep into the tournament.
Appreciate that.
Wonderful.
I do too.
It's like a seesaw affair.
My team is playing right now, but I don't know what's going on because obviously show is far, far, far more important than the March Madness.
You mean you don't have like a little you don't have like a little earpiece in on the other ear like you're in church and like listening to the game?
No.
Okay.
No. Oh.
Today we are going to have, I believe it's the fourth visit.
Fourth visit. And we're going to have some fun today, too.
From the fourth visit from Mary Marshall. Wonderful lady. She is gifted. In fact, let me quote her. Mary Marshall says, "As a psychic medium, when I tune into energies, I receive what I am meant to know to help someone." Now, that's a mission statement.
It is. It is.
Mary Marshall chooses to use her gifts given to her by God with love and the highest intentions of good to provide others with comfort, healing, or perhaps knowing that your loved ones are still nearby and therefore with you. So for the fourth time, we are happy to say welcome Mary Marshall to Manson Mitchell.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We are so happy to have you back. Gary calls you like one of the full service psychics because you have such a wide background. And we know a few people like that that can do just about anything.
Well,
we are definitely going to be talking about the powers of the mind through this hour. But you brought up something to us that Gary and I never heard of. We have never talked before on this show. And we got so excited about it. We were doing our own research. And so I believe our listeners have not heard of this either. You are bringing something absolutely unique today to Manson Mitchell. And we've been on 17 years this month. And so we've been on a long time. And we have never discussed this. This is a completely fascinating topic. And so we want to spend a little time in the first half talking about this, and then we are going to talk about other powers of the mind and how this all connects of a piece. But what we're talking about is remembering things incorrectly. And you told us about that. What is the background to what this is called and what it is?
It is something which I absolutely still find fascinating, called the Mandela Effect. And it got this name because as this, at least as we know, this is how it goes, is that somebody by the name of Fiona Broome or Brome, I may be pronouncing the last name incorrectly, around 2009, 2010, that she recalled having vivid and detailed memories of news coverage of Nelson Mandela dying in prison in the 1980s, despite the fact that he actually died in 2013. And it was when she was putting this out there, and it was after a conference having to do with paranormal topics and whatnot, it took off like crazy because as we, you know, the age of internet was wonderful in this case because so many people were, you know, claiming the same thing as her. And so this is how it got its name because it seems kind of odd to me, like, where did Mandela effect come from? But that's where it came from. And basically what it is, it's a type of what is considered a type of false memory or memory by some of us that occur when a group or a lot of different people basically remember the same thing, but they're remembering it incorrectly. And there's a couple different, you know, I was going to go into something. I'm just going to wait. I'll let you ask the questions. I'm always just talking, going on about something.
Well, thank you for letting us be the interviewers. Mary, in doing our research for today's show, we went on several websites and one had a long, long list of these things. And I think at this point, before you do more talking about the Mandela effect, it would be fun to just talk about several examples so that people will have a sense about what it is we're talking about before we talk about it anymore. And
Can I start with one that you won't be in that article, which is the one that I actually told you about that got you going on this with the song?
You can start with that one. I did find it.
Oh, did you find it in there? Okay.
With the words that are incorrect. I found it on Google with the incorrect words on it.
So if you're, for the people who are listening, is if you're familiar with, you know, with Christmas songs and you are familiar with White Christmas, it starts out with, I'll be home for Christmas. You can blank on me, fill in that word. So, you know, get everybody's kind of thoughts going, I'll be home for Christmas. You can on me.
You can count on me.
Yeah. And that's what I say. And that is pretty much what, and I'm going to say it oddly, like 9.5 out of 10 people, but 9 out of 10 people at the very least. And honestly, I have not come across anybody personally who has not said, you can count on me. However, count is not the word. It says, if you look up all the lyrics and listen to anybody from Bing Crosby to, you know, Michael Bublé to whatever, it's you can plan on me. And everybody who hears that, especially because a lot of times I'll actually play the lyrics and stop if I'm doing it in class, people are just like, no, like there's just no way. So it's really, as you're going to give examples, attest to the idea that you have mass amounts of people who have a very clear recollection of something according to, you know, I'm going to say, you know, internet or whatever now, never existed as we recall it.
Lucy, you have some splaining to do.
Oh, is that one of them?
Ricky Ricardo never said that on the Lucy show.
Oh my
Lucy,
gosh.
We have some splaining to do. And we quote that all the time.
Yeah.
He never said that.
Wow.
Fascinating. One of the ones that I thought was kind of funny was a couple of serial names. K- Captain Crunch. I mean, who here has not had Captain Crunch cereal at some point in their lives? There is no Captain Crunch cereal.
It's what?
It is C-A-P apostrophe N.
Okay.
Crunch. Cap'n.
Captain. Okay.
It's Cap'n, not Captain Crunch. They have consolidated that into C-A-P. And the other one was Fruit Loops.
That Fruit was Loops. The one that got me hooked into this.
Yes. Fruit Loops is F-R-O-O-T Loops, not F-R-U-I-T Loops. Fruit Loops. Misspelled.
When there is a gentleman who is an engineer and he's made a lot of paranormal equipment, work with Ghost Adventures guys at Bill Chappell, and I was at a conference with him, and he's the one, I have to say, who brought this to my attention. And the first one he came up with, and he asked, and he said the Fruit Loops. And that was when I got, no, it was not always F-R-O-O-T. Come on, somewhere we're going to dig this up and we're going to find that it's changed. And it hasn't. Supposedly, it's always been, you know, it's always been spelled F-R-O-O-T versus the word fruit.
How many people with their children or as children heard the opening music to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. That is not what he sings. And if I were to ask you, what's the first line of the song? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. That is not what he's singing.
What does it say that he's saying?
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood. This neighborhood.
Yeah.
The neighborhood.
Now, this is just an opinion. Some of them that are like this, I could see there being some small, because it's a very slight change, right? From this neighborhood in the neighborhood. And that we are continuing, which that kind of goes into, one of the explanations that they kind of give for it, which is like this called confabulation, is your brain filling in gaps or this. But the other one is that it's post-event information where you are hearing other people. And so after the fact, the perceptions and memories are changed and vulnerable bits, that it may be stored in the information could change. And honestly, there is something to some of the psychology, the medical science, psychology of that. I have to say, because as we know, like we always use this for law, like witnesses, witness statements, but that is the most unreliable thing to do is taking witnesses' statements on. So what did this person look like and what did they do? And they have done other types of research and test on this. And, one of them, and I may have said this before, but it was in a college setting and a professor walked in, I'm going to rush this story along, puts his briefcase on the desk, says to the students, I'll be right back. Can you just watch this? Watch my stuff. I'll be right back. In the meantime, somebody else comes in, picks up that suitcase and leaves. The original professor comes back and says, hey, where's my stuff? And somebody said, some guy came in and he took it. What do you mean? Well, what did he look like? And they went through everything from he had glasses to no glasses, facial hair to no facial hair, those types of things. So we do, our brains are very fallible. With that being said, when you have other types of mass amounts of people recalling certain things like this, like for me, it was like the Monopoly guy. Does he wear, having a monocle? And he never had a monocle. Those types of things. Again, it's, are we filling in information? But when you have mass amounts of people, you have to start to sort of question the reality of it and almost think, is this a possibility that we are dealing with, and this is the left field here, but with an alternate reality. If you are dealing with alternate realities or universe, copy universes that are somehow mixing timelines, kind of breaks off tearing fabrics, that this could result in people having the same memories because the timeline has been altered as we shift between these alternate realities. Now, as out there as that sounds, that cannot be, because of the way it works, that cannot be disproven. It cannot be proven, it cannot be disproven, just in the same way that the psychological field will tell you, oh, it's confabulation. Oh, it's misleading post-event information. It's priming. All these other reasons. So they're equally provable or disprovable. So it's kind of up in the air. Due to what I do in getting into the whole idea of multiverse and consciousness and mind and what we're going to, you know, you were talking about of what a person is capable of. I tend to think I don't discount either. I don't, that it is an alternate timeline, alternate reality, or it's sometimes could be as well that it's a psychological thing for us humans.
We're going to get into more of that kind of conversation, especially in the second half. There was one of those examples you really liked, Gary.
It's interesting to me because I always knew this product as liquid paper.
Oh, liquid paper, yeah.
But whiteout, WITE, maybe that's a competing brand, I don't know. WITE, whiteout, not white out, WHITE. So,
wow.
The idea of spelling, I always knew it as liquid paper, which I understand. I think there's a popular conception, and I'm pretty sure it's true. I believe I heard. So now you have me doubting myself, Mary.
I know, right? It's like, because I'm listening to you and being somebody who's been in, was in an office for many, many years, I want to say I agree with you. That it was not, so they're saying it was always WITE and there was no actual H in the word, correct?
Right. And the formula for liquid paper, if I have this correct, there was actually invented by, do you know whom?
Wait, all right, I don't know, but I know Post-its. Is that the same person?
I don't think
Okay. Because wasn't it Post-its was the monkeys guy, Peter, not Peter, Mike?
This is how this happens. You know, this is an example.
Right, exactly.
The formula for liquid paper, as I understand it, was invented by the mother of Michael Nesmith of the monkeys.
Okay, so she did that one too.
Well, I don't know if she just did the one or both. See, now we're going to have to go snipe hunting.
On the commercial, we're going to have to start Googling Post-it notes and see, was she part of that? Wow. It's very confusing for people because we do exactly as you go along, you start questioning yourself more and more. Because you're faced with something, a different reality than your mind, your memory is telling you. Right. And when you keep repeating it over and over and over with all these different ones, you start going, and then every once in a while, you start thinking, okay, am I crazy? But then every once in a while, you just get that one that you're just like, no way, 100%. I'm not, you know, I know this, and yet, it's inaccurate.
Yeah. Inaccurate. Well, most of our baby boomers would have grown up hearing the jingle on TV. My baloney has a first name. It's OSCOR. My baloney has a second name. It's...
I know this one, so I can't. Okay. I'll let you finish it.
Well,
you're bringing it, yeah.
It's either M-E-Y-E-R or M-A-Y-E-R. Oscar Mayer. The baloney's last name
is
M-A-Y-E-R. It's Oscar Mayer.
Yeah.
And it may be pronounced Meyer, because you hear Oscar Meyer, people saying Oscar Meyer, Oscar Meyer. It's not M-E-Y-E-R.
Yeah, I'm actually singing it in my head.
Yes, I know. Everybody is singing it in their heads right now.
Because I'm like, and that one for me personally, I'm not, it's not like, oh, no. Like, I'm not sure. I could be, you know, one of those for me personally.
Well,
I wish people would like, somebody's got to call in.
Well, jingles are from our childhood. I mean, we grew up with jingles. You don't hear that quite as much now, but you know, when we were watching television, you know, back in the 60s, everybody had a jingle. I mean, whether you were a detergent or a food or whatever it was, there was a jingle attached to it. And so we've got all these little things in our head, some of which we don't remember correctly.
How about you'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with?
Pepsodent.
See, I don't remember that one.
You may be too young.
If you want to shorten it, you can just say you'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth.
Ed McMahon, do you remember him as the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes guy?
Yes, except.
Yes, of course. Except that he was never a spokesman for Publishers Clearinghouse, even though he went knocking on the doors and trying to give away money. He was the spokesman for American Family Publishers.
That is a big one for a lot of people. Personal interacting with different people on this topic over time. That's a big one that people will argue and go, no way. Like I even remember getting the little... in the mail with his little picture in the corner.
Ed McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Publishers Clearinghouse. No. I thought of two. I think one may not apply, but the other one definitely applies. And this was not on any list. And the one that I see that almost everybody gets incorrectly is when they are ordering a glass of cold tea over ice in a restaurant. It's iced tea, I-C-E-D, iced tea. It's tea versus, that's been iced tea.
Versus ice.
And people say iced tea. Iced tea. They leave off the D and they think they're correct when they say, I'll have some iced tea. There is no such thing as iced tea. But now you'll even see it incorrectly on menus. They don't even put iced tea anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that getting that incorrectly has gone to a whole other level. The tea is iced.
But you know what? It's kind of a good example to show how that transition happens. Because if you're seeing it on menus now, eventually that becomes it. People are going to be like, well, it's iced tea. No, it was iced tea. No, it wasn't, because it just became an acceptable thing that got passed along through language, partially because it's one of those words that you really would have to pronounce, and depending upon, what your dialect, in this country, would be, that you would be like, I'm a Chicagoland area person. We tend to drop our NGs on like any, I'm going to exaggerate it, anything versus anything.
Yeah.
It's that. So that's one of those words where eventually people are going to this will be on the list and arguing it, going, no, it was never iced tea. It was iced tea.
Right. It was iced tea. And it never was that, you know, and you brought up an interesting point. I was an English major in college. And as boring as that sounds, I will tell you that one of the most fascinating things that I learned in looking at language over the millennia is that I can guarantee you that you would not understand a single line of Old English. Zero. You would not understand one word of it. If you get to Middle English, you might get a sense about it without really understanding it. And what I learned ultimately about the language that we all use, no matter what language it is that it changes. And when the language changes, then that change becomes permanent. Otherwise, we would be talking like Old English or Middle English. And so whatever it is that we're speaking now is going to change by the fact that people's usage of it changes. And that is how language changes. So in the future, there'll be an iced tea and it'll be 100% perfectly fine and correct, and it'll go into the dictionary that way. The dictionary right. makes changes according to common usage.
Yeah.
And so that's what happens with language. It changes over time. And well, and we're part of that process.
I mean, that makes total sense to me, just listening to you, because that's evolution. And the language is part of that. It evolves with us. And so that, and it evolves in the communication and so on, because obviously when we went from, you know, regular phone calls to texting and messages, especially when you first started, right, because you didn't have the little keyboards or a little, now you have mon screen, but you had the physical keyboards. But even before that, you would have to like take it and go look at the, you know, five and go, 1, 2, okay, I got to get to J, and take you three times to get the letter J out, you know, that kind of thing. So people started cutting things down, and it became just common knowledge to have these condensed versions of these words. But again, it's just with your technology, with our evolution, language has, I would think, has to change.
And eventually go away when we're all communicating psychically. Ah!
Yes.
Let's take our break.
Yes. I telepathically picked up on that. Our honored guest of the hour is Mary Marshall. We have much more to talk about on the other side of a short break. We are Manson Mitchell, and very glad that you tuned in. We'll be right back.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beautiful
wood. Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine. With all your itinerary, we could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please, get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.
If you are ready to add certified hypnotherapist and certified past life regressionist to your credentials, Mary Lee LeBay is offering a 120-hour certification course online starting April 16. Invest 2 hours every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to noon for 10 weeks for your personal and professional growth. Receive a one-hour private hypnotherapy or past life session with Mary Lee and a copy of her latest book, Mastering Hypnotherapy, Transformational Strategies for Healers and Coaches. Manson Mitchell listeners save 20% by registering with coupon code RADIO20 for savings totaling over $1,000. This offer ends on March 16 for the general public and is extended to March 23 for listeners of this show. Go to MaryLeelaBay.com and register today.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual, novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Terry Loving wants to help you with your online marketing challenges right now. She has several courses she is giving away to help you get your business working for you online. Yes, giving away. WordPress websites are her specialty, yet her technical skills go way beyond that. Check out her blog at terryloving.com or email her directly at terry@terryloving.com. That's terry@terryloving.com.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
On the path to good health and well-being? Alternative Talk 1150 is the station for you.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and our guest this hour, Mary Marshall, making her fourth appearance with us today in the last couple of years. Mary, if people would like to connect with you, we've been having fun today talking about the Mandela effect. Generally, you are the full-service psychic medium, and so I'd like you to talk about where people can find you, your website, any social media, any classes or circles or anything that you're involved with that you would like to share with our listeners.
The easiest way, I'm going to just mention two websites because I kind of can get people to where they need to go, which is theparanormalmd.com and mediummarymarshall.com. One of the things I'm kind of excited about is I am going to be teaching a class that will be held by Zoom. So anybody across the country, even it's through the college, a local college here, and it's an intro to parapsychology. So even though the college is local, it is a Zoom class, so anybody can join, and that is through the College of DuPage, but that information is on my website as well. The other one is that I have been fortunate enough to get with a group of people that I now have some talent, as they call it, management, which is through Soul Circle Paranormal. And they're just a great group of people that are just getting out there and trying to do some representing some of us, that both TV and non-TV people, because it's interesting, you sometimes you're non-TV people, and no offense to anybody of anyone who is, your non-TV people know and maybe have even more experience and knowledge than the ones that make it onto some sort of television show. And so they see the value in that. So I've been really excited to be part of them as well. Other than that, I think it's pretty much, you know, just getting out there and trying to do some reads for people.
When does the class through the College of DuPage start?
It actually starts, and I should have been prepared for that. I believe it's going to start in
April?
June.
Oh, in June. Okay, so people have some time to sign up for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, good. It's in June. It starts in June, and it's a three-week course. It is an intro. I'm going to, at that point, kind of after the fact, break it down into smaller, I'll say workshops focusing on one or two topics, because there's so much involved in parapsychology that, you know, I would have had to make this an 8-week course. And that's just a lot for people these days to commit to. So I try to, you know, keep everything down into something that's manageable.
You know, I myself appreciate shorter courses, because if you take a break, you can always do another short course, but it is very difficult for us in our very hectic lives to say, I'll do this, you know, every week for 8 weeks. It's at least kind of difficult. Okay. Well, here's the rest of the story. The Mandela effect, really haven't heard of it before. Got into it, found out how we are remembering things incorrectly. I love the one about Snow White. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? That was not what she said. She said, magic mirror on the wall. I mean, I've always remembered it as mirror, mirror, not magic mirror on the wall. And so when we're looking at how the mind works, we do remember things correctly. Gary's got a mind like a steel trap for remembering details. I mean, he is
that's
like,
not good for arguments.
So good. And then we remember things incorrectly, and we've pointed out a bunch of examples about that earlier. But it's all part of a bigger picture about how the mind works. And you know, you were saying that some of these examples could involve something psychological, remembering things a certain way. It could be an alternate universe. It also, it reminds me of using things, using your mind in a particular way that will benefit you. And we talked a little bit in preparation for today about using your mind to the best advantage to come up with things that you couldn't do in your ordinary everyday life. And one of the other things that we have not talked about very much is this idea of psychokinesis or telekinesis. And so I wanted you to say a little bit about working the mind using that.
Okay, I'm going to start with something here, is that sometimes I think it's easier for people, and it is for me, to separate what our brain functions do and what can happen and our mind, because you tend to more like in parapsychology associate the mind with a consciousness, and that can kind of lead you into you know, things like psychic telekinesis and so on. To give a quick example for some of the brain deceptions. I think one of the most common ones that people may be aware of, which is pareidolia, and that is seeing things, objects that are not, we're giving meaning to other things. And what I mean by that is you look up at a cloud and you go, oh, that looks like a bear or a duck. And it's just the shaping of the cloud. Part of that is because our brains have like some of the top three designs that it will do is facial recognition. That is one. And so you have a facial recognition, and our brains, number two, do not like to be lied to. So we can convince ourselves of things that may not be factual, see them or miss them. But I'm going to give you some very specific ones. There's one called the McGurk effect. This is like when your eyes are overriding what you're hearing. And so what that would mean is that you could see, if you were to watch a person and you're seeing it, their mouths move and they're just saying, I'm going to just do a syllable at this point and just go like ba, 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 ba. And as you watch the mouth, you will hear and you see the word B-A-A. Person's going to hear ba, ba, ba. They're going to see the B. If you change it and now their eyes are seeing the word F-A-A, fa, 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 while watching the mouth, that's what the person's going to hear. So it's really interesting how fallible our brains are and how we take in information. Another one is motion-induced blindness. Literally every day, probably 10,000 plus, depending upon what, I guess, what you're doing in your life and where you're going, of objects literally erase from your sight. So this can happen even while you're driving. So that are you, and what it happens is your brain says, you know, it makes just you're not consciously doing it. It is making decisions for you of that's not important. You don't need to know that. Boom, gone. And will have you focus on what it thinks is important. The other thing is having to do with, people can having a limb association, right? You can have a fake limb put there. And if the person is being touched on their real hand and they can't see the real hand, but they're doing it at the same time as they're touching a fake hand in front of you, it will get to the point to where the examiner can be touching the fake hand and the person will feel the sensation. It's a lot of this delusional, if you will, kind of thing we do to ourselves. With that being said, let's bring that over into the mind side when you start dealing with consciousness, which is like some of the things that you were talking about, which has to do with, whether it's psychic and mediumship or telepathy, which telepathy is communicating with someone mentally without using any words or any other sign. It's really more in the sense of mind reading. Or if you have, I'm trying to think of another one here off the top of my head, precognition. It's a form of ESP. It's a form that states that you can have awareness of future events, whether they occur or not. And interestingly, when you get things like this and you kind of move over to something like remote viewing kind of, depending upon who you could talk to on this, will straddle either or. Remote viewing is a practice of seeking either impressions and information at an unseen distance. So you kind of target where you want to go. I want to go into your house right now, and that's where I'm going to project to. The interesting part with remote viewing is, by the way, this has been used extensively by the government the U.S. government. Russell Targ was a physicist and parapsychologist who kind of headed this up. And they were using this for spying. So now we have things like, you know, drones the size of a fly. So we can start using those methods. So it's not in practice as much, but this was an actual department. So the thing with remote viewing is that's, some can consider it a form of astral projection combined with ESP abilities. And other people just say, no, it's an ESP ability.
We spoke to a remote viewer on our show by the name of John Herlosky. He was trained by the CIA, and he said that anybody could be trained. You did not have to have psychic ability, but they trained you. Any normal person could be trained to remote view. And they went and looked at things at the bottom of the ocean or out in space or anywhere around the world in deserts and remote places to let the CIA know what was there.
Which really is kind of interesting because it is then a kind of a combination of that astral projection, which anybody should be able to do, and the psychic side of things. It is a really interesting aspect that you can do it. I know for me, I was self-taught in doing this. And some of the things I had to do was because I addressed the psychic and mediumship side of things first, I had to learn how to try to separate the two. And so when I first started, you want to start with some very basic things, just texture, color, smell, sounds, you know, and just be very specific rather than that impression of, you know, how a person is feeling or what, you know, all of what they're doing. But, you know, you had an expert on it, so I'm not going to get into that portion of it. But having that anyone be able to do it is absolutely accurate. It is just a matter of continuous and consistent practice. For me personally, I used to put myself out there more, not just as a psychic medium, as a remote viewer. I have actually pulled it from my website. And the reason being is because I was using it for missing person cases. And that's the intention. Once I had stopped doing that and you stop using it, and I hadn't been doing it for years and years, I would have to commit myself to that exercise learning process to make it very clear and easy to do. But yeah, anybody can do it. It's just a matter of commitment and knowing, you know, where to start on it and where to go.
Now, with this body of knowledge that you have and all the experience to go with, Mary, where do you place OBEs, out-of-body experiences? Have you had one? I have not. Suzanne believes that she did have one a long time ago. Tell us, give us your perspective on OBEs.
I'm going to say it so again, for people listening, the out-of-body experience, first of all, is that feeling of being detached from your physical body, you know, and you can either hover above or travel other places to, and you can see and hear and experience. In cognitive science, in psychology, they're considered more like a dissociative experience, having to do with neurological or psychological factors. People can use the out-of-body experience. That, in a sense, is an astral projection as well. You can get there through meditations and things like that and can remove and separate yourself. I have talked to people who have tried to do it and succeeded in doing it and actually got scared and kind of pulled back from it because it was, you did it, Okay, tell me what your experience was.
Oh, no, I want to hear about your experience. I've already talked about mine.
Okay. And, you know, and it can be very frightening, you know, and they, yes. you know, kind of pull back from that. It's another term could be considered astral travel, astral projection, soul journey, or soul wandering type of thing, spiritual travel. So a lot of times, like especially with the Native American culture, they would have referred to that more as a spiritual travel journey. And it kind of crosses over a little bit, this altered state of out-of-body experience, really with near-death experience as well. Because both of these, one, you're having a person who actually died and didn't and came back. So they should really call it near death, but I understand why they do it. And that's an ND. there's kind of a crossover there, because in the near death experience, not all, but some people also report leaving their bodies, hovering either over themselves in the corner of a room, even going to adjoining rooms during when they were legally dead. That there is no heart and nothing's coming up, even seemingly brain activity at that point. With that being said, we know through science that there are still some neurons firing randomly. What's interesting about the out-of-body experience or near-death experience, where you have that out-of-body experience, is that people will report very specifically what the conversations were, who said what, you know, the doctor dropped this, the person in the next room, what they were wearing and conversing about. And those things have been checked, verified that that's in fact what occurred. That's impossible. That is just impossible. So there is a crossover. I guess the point being is there is a crossover between those. And there's a gentleman, Bruce Grayson, that he did probably, gosh, I don't even know. And there's another one, Jeffrey Long. They're both doctors, different types. One's an oncologist. Like he did over 5,000 documenting near-death experiences. So it is a real phenomenon that does not have really any solid scientific explanation. There are some scientific theories that maybe sort of, but when you get down to that, knowing what happened in other rooms even of where you were located when you died, there is no explanation for that.
Well, it's we're pretty close to the end of our hour together, Mary. In terms of your mediumship, how is it going there? You've been doing this for how many years?
A lot of years. I mean, it's one of those things where you have it pretty much your whole life, you know, and you just try to, at a certain point, think, what am I going to do with this? And for me, you know, you brought something up that had said, oh, that's a mission statement, and saying that giving you messages that I receive messages that you are meant to know. One of the things as a medical intuitive as well, I have had the experience of letting people know some very, very serious things that were going on with them, and had three of these people come back to me after the fact and said, you know, I feel even weird saying this, but you saved my life. I do not go to the doctor and I would not have known this. And they were some very serious things. So when you have those types of things, and then you have to compare it to the alternative, quite honestly, are there people out there that I didn't pick up anything on? Why is that? Because that's not their journey. So it was not a message that they were meant to know.
Interesting. Yeah.
And finally,
how do you set boundaries? If you're shopping, you're in the supermarket, and all of a sudden there's a voice and maybe a face to go with saying, can you make contact with that person over there wearing the blue jeans and the blue shirt? That's my cousin. I want him to know that I'm okay.
You know, I'm actually really good at this. And the reason is because I tried to suppress it for so many years that I learned really well how to put up, the imaginary, I'll say, but wall to kind of block, but also putting out there to my spirit guides, who are kind of the gatekeepers, if you will, and to the spirit world, those boundaries, you know, don't come in my bedroom at night, you know, those types of things, just setting up boundaries.
Mary Marshall.
Thank you for being with us today.
Always a delight.
That was great. The Mandela Effect. We've covered it now on Manson Mitchell.
Yes, we have.
First time, a first. I'm glad. And thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure.
All right.
Coming up tomorrow,
we've got Mary Beckman.
She will be our guest host.
She will be. And later today on American Road Trip Talk, you are talking to
Carl Petrie about Henry M. Leland, a titan of the automotive industry. Have a great weekend, everybody.